Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
For Your Benefit. We're here this morning with James Marshall. James, you give me your title because you wear many hats.
Somebody was asking me about my dad. He said, I heard you were on the radio show coming up on Monday, and he said, they should label you as an expert so that way you can get more gigs. I was laughing. I said, well, I don't know if I'm an expert, but a lot of people call me an expert in the areas that govern retirement benefits, specifically federal retirement benefits. If it's a federal benefit, you know, I tend to know a lot about that from the experience that I've worked with, you know, multiple agencies in all branches of the federal government. But I don't know what an official title is, but I guess a federal retirement specialist. That's a good title.
Sounds good to me. And then fellow seminar presenter and soon to be an author, pilot.
Working towards that. I got some friends that are helping me out with that. They give me a hard time because sometimes I get busy and I don't do as much writing as I should.
Yeah, I think I can understand that one. Anyway, but James is going to focus today on Social Security, and I'm going to be taking notes, and y'all might too as well. But you also should take the advantage of calling James because he's available between now, which is about 10:08 Eastern Time, on March 19th. 2012, and we'll be here for about another 50 minutes, and please give us a call. If you're listening to this archived, don't call us because we won't be here, but you can email us, and we'll talk about the email later. However, the phone number is 202-465-3080, 202-465-3080. My name is Bob Lines. I'm an accountant finance type as well as a seminar presenter, and I'm just going to listen to James and ask him hopefully not too stupid questions, but let's start off. You were good enough to do an outline here, and we'll talk first about how does Social Security affect CSRS retirees. Now, we will cover FERS, certainly, but we're going to jump into CSRS initially. So that's kind of a wide-open question, but how does it affect it? And maybe we should look at the Catch-62 military service first.
Absolutely.
But you blazed the trail here.
Well, let's talk about this. So the first group of people, you know, that are probably listening to this show that I would like to address are those folks who are under CSRS, the Civil Service Retirement System, who are not currently having Social Security taxes withheld from their pay. So we're not really talking about offset folks. We'll talk about those folks in a few minutes. You know, the offset employees are those people who left the federal government for more than a year. You know, they've had a break in service of more than a year since 1984, and when they came back, they were placed under CSRS offset. We'll cover those guys in a few minutes. But people that are currently CSRS, in regards to their military service. So let me tell you this up front. If you don't have any prior military service, or if you're retired active duty and you don't ever plan on waiving your military retirement to get credit for your military service under CSRS, then Social Security will never affect your CSRS pension. The only time that Social Security ever affects CSRS pensions are for those folks who have military service that's credible under the computation of their CSRS pension. And that's because what you brought up, Bob, the Catch-62 rule for military deposits. So we're talking about a scenario where someone who is CSRS has some prior military service that they had maybe before they began their federal civilian career. Let's say that, for example, they're like me. They had 10 years of military service. They're not collecting any active duty retirement off of that 10 years of military service. If they want to get credit in the computation of their pension, as long as they began their career before October 1st, 1982, which a lot of our CSRS folks started, was before October 1st, 82, they fall under this Catch-62 rule, meaning that they don't have to pay a dime for their military deposit. And for free, they'll get credit in the computation of their pension, not only for retirement eligibility, but in the computation of their pension for their military service. You know, 10 years of military service might give somebody 20%. If you're giving yourself credit for 2% for every year of service credit, certainly 20% of your high three average salary is nothing to really throw away.
Would this apply to, because we have folks in class that are in the reserves, and maybe they didn't have service way back when, but they're in the reserves. When they, quote, retire from reserve duty, or if they don't retire, they're in the reserves, say, for 10 years. Are they impacted by this, reservists?
Well, the reservists don't have to waive their Title 10 retirement, so that is a key difference. You know, so they are impacted by this. If they They don't have to pay their military deposits, though, if they're CSRS. If they began CSRS before October 1st, 82, they don't have to pay their military deposits. And all that active duty time, you know, not the reserve time, like the 2 weeks the 2 weeks every summer counts, but the weekend drills don't count. It's got to be active duty for training. So any federal active duty for training, even though you're going to receive a Title 10 retirement at age 60, all that active duty for training is credible for retirement eligibility, so it should be part of your retirement SED, service computation day, and it's also used in the computation of your CSRS pension, even if you don't pay the deposit. But the catch 62 rule is, if you are eligible for Social Security benefits by the time you retire or age 62, whichever is later. So we got a lot of folks who retire before the age of 62. Whether they pay their military deposit or not, they're going to get their full CSRS pension until they turn 62. But if they're eligible, if they already have their 40 credits, which we'll maybe define what a credit is in a moment, but if they already have their 40 credits under Social Security and they're entitled to Social Security benefits at age 62, whether they apply for it or not, OPM will take that military deposit service away from them if they had not paid their military deposit before they separated. And so in a couple of minutes, we'll talk about a rule of thumb. You know, should I pay my deposit or not? But right now, just know that if you're eligible for Social Security benefits at 62 or date of retirement, you might want to consider paying that military deposit before you separate, because you can't pay it after you separate. You must pay that deposit to your agency, your employing agency, before you separate from federal service.
Okay. Now I understand.
So we'll make that clear by saying, if you're never going to get your Social Security credits, if you're never going to go out and work long enough, and it takes about 10 years to get 40 credits, but some people worked, you know, in the military, obviously that counts. You paid Social Security taxes if you were in the military since 1957, which most of our listeners, if they were in the military, it was probably since 1957. So those years, you know, but you may have only had 3 or 4 years in the military, for example, and maybe had a little bit of temporary time when you started your federal career before you got converted to CSRS. You might have paid some Social Security taxes there. Or maybe when you were in college before you became a Fed, maybe you worked somewhere and you got some credits. But if you don't think you're going to get your 40 credits by the time you turn 62 or date of retirement, whichever is later, you might want to save the money, because for free for the rest of your life, you're going to get credit for that military service. Even if you get your 40 credits later, it's interesting to note that let's say that I've got about 30 credits and I've got a couple of years, 2 or 3 years of working somewhere else before I can even get my 40 credits, you know, because I got to work and pay Social Security taxes to finish getting my full 40 credits. So in this situation, if I retire, for example, at age 60 with 30-some-odd years of service under CSRS, like my full pension, I did not pay my military deposit. As long as I don't get my 40 credits by the time I turn 62, it's a one-time look from OPM. OPM contacts Social Security either at the date of retirement or age 62, whichever is later. And they ask the one question, is he or she entitled to Social Security benefits? And if the answer is no, they hang up the phone and they leave you alone for the rest of your life. And you keep the service credit in the computation of your pension for your unpaid military deposit. So maybe the only folks under CSRS who might want to consider paying their military deposits are those folks who think they will have their 40 credits under the Social Security program by the time they turn 62 or date of retirement, whichever is later.
Okay. What if I'm, if you will, pure CSRS and I have no military background, I'm not an offset, but my spouse, if I'm married or a significant other in the States that you could do this, how would that impact the pure CSRS person? So, let's say I'm married to somebody that is anything but a federal employee, so therefore they've been covered by Social Security during their work career. Does that impact my pension?
Not at all. I mean, the Social Security benefit that your spouses earn, you know, they're working out there in the private sector, and you're a CSRS employee, you know, that benefit doesn't affect your pension. But they may be earning a benefit for you, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes when we talk about, well, how is Social Security affected by your CSRS pensions? You know, we'll cover that. But any benefit that your spouse has earned, and you can correct me or maybe reword your question if I'm not understanding your question properly, but any Social Security benefit your spouse has earned will never affect your CSRS pension.
Okay. My question was, I'm pure CSRS. I've never had a day's worth of work that I had any Social Security coverage. I'm not offset. But I am married to somebody I'm considering marrying somebody that is covered under Social Security, and I'm not going to be impacted by that on my annuity.
That's right. That's right. Because the Catch 62, remember, that's really the only time that a CSRS retiree has to worry about Social Security is if they got their own 40 credits. Because if they have earned a benefit, that there's, you know, the spouse has earned a benefit for them, that does not affect the okay. unpaid military deposit
service. So there's a line in the sand, and the one side doesn't come to the other.
That's right, in that case. And they never penalize these spouses for marrying people that are under CSRS. I mean, there's no penalties for them marrying those people under CSRS.
Okay, we should put that on Match.com.
That's right.
All righty. So this is really good. Next, how does Social Security affect offset retirees? Now, what's an offset retiree again? Because it sounds, you know, people in class will say, I'm offset. And, you know, I'll say, okay. And it's, you know,
sure
it's like they're different. They are different in one case, but, you know, but what is an offset? So that if we hear it, the folks listening go, okay, now I understand what an offset
is. Gotcha. Well, we'll explain what the offset is in a moment, which is kind of a, you know, another word for reduction, but a CSRS offset employee or a CSRS offset retiree is somebody who's worked for the federal government. You know, they started their career before 1984, so they were under the old retirement system.
So they were definitely CSRS.
They were CSRS.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they might not have been. There are some exceptions to the rules where you had a bunch of temporary appointments long before 84, and you never were CSRS, but you had at least 5 years of potentially credible service under CSRS, and then later when you got a covered position on or after January 1st, 1984, they might have placed you under CSRS offset. But typically an offset employee is somebody who used to be CSRS, was vested, you know, had at least 5 years or more, and then left the federal government for more than a year. You know, that period of, or that break in service ended on or after January 1st, 1984. So they had a break in service of more than a year on or after January 1st, 1984. When they came back, the Social Security Act, the amendments that they made and passed in 1983 that became effective in 84, they forced that employee to pay Social Security taxes. So they no longer paid the full 7% contribution into CSRS. They paid a Social Security tax, which was essentially the 6.2% tax. So the difference of what they paid into CSRS, what was left over back then, it was an extra 1.3% went into CSRS. And because they don't pay as much into CSRS anymore, that's the reason why there's a reduction to their CSRS pension later on in life once they're retired and become eligible for Social Security benefits. So that's the purpose. That's the reason for the reduction or the offset is because those offset employees don't pay as much money into the Civil Service Retirement Fund.
But in theory, the Social Security income and the offset CSRS income would be in total then the same?
It can be. It can never be less. It can never be less than what you've earned as a CSRS employee because the reduction or the offset to a pension for someone who's CSRS offset. So we're talking about someone who's retired. First of all, if I retire as a CSRS offset employee before the age of 62, because I'm not going to be eligible for Social Security benefits until I reach the age of 62. If I retire before 62, I get a full CSRS pension for the next few years. The offset or the reduction does not occur until I become eligible for Social Security. And that's when they look at my Social Security benefit. OPM is going to contact Social Security, so they don't make a phone call to you. They call Social Security, and they ask them a series of questions. The first question is he or she eligible for Social Security benefits? And, of course, we know the answer to that would be if you have your 40 credits by then, which most of our offset employees would have by the time they turn 62, because they've been paying their Social Security taxes all these years, mm-hmm. even as an offset employee, plus whatever else or the work that they may have done while they had a break in service, perhaps. So a lot of these folks will have their 40 credits. But if the answer is no, then OPM hangs up the phone and continues to give you your full CSRS pension until you become eligible for Social Security benefits. But in most of the cases, they're usually eligible when they make that phone call. So the next question would be, well, how much are they eligible for right now? They get that figure, you know, and that money that you're eligible to receive at 62 is not only the based on taxes that you paid as an offset employee, but it's also based on taxes that you paid elsewhere, working in the private sector or maybe even in the military, for example. So that Social Security check at age 62 is really going to be a combination of apples and oranges, if you allow me to use this analogy.
I like it.
Apples is the benefit that you receive from Social Security, you know, the monetary number that you receive based on the taxes that you paid in the private sector. And the oranges is the Social Security benefit based on taxes that you paid as an offset employee, you know, since you're breaking service, you know, from the federal government. So the most that OPM can reduce your Social Security benefit by are those oranges. So you don't care where you get your money from, do you? Whether you get your money from Uncle Sam with a hat where it says OPM, or whether you get your money from Uncle Sam that has a hat that says Social Security, you're going to get that money. It cannot be reduced more than that. But this offset rule says it's reduced by the lesser of one of two items, either those oranges that you earned as an offset employee during your career from Social Security, or a formula, which is a pretty simple formula. And 9 times out of 10, the lesser of the two is this formula that I'll share with you now, and you can write this down. It's pretty simple to run this. Anybody can go home tonight and get a guesstimate of what their offset would be, and 9 times out of 10, it tends to be this number. All you have to do is figure out how much Social Security am I going to be eligible to receive at age 62. You can maybe look at what you received last year with your benefit statements, or maybe since they're no longer giving statements anymore, you can go online and get a quick estimate of what your total Social Security benefit will look like when you turn 62 years old. Remember, that's a combination of apples and oranges. You write that number down. And then you figure out how many years of service will I have under offset by the time I retire. And let's say, for example, I'll have 20 years offset. You take that 20 years of offset service and divide it by 40. You always divide those number of years of offset service by 40. That's going to give you a percentage. And so obviously 20 divided by 40 is 50%. So 50% of that Social Security benefit at 62, you know, let's say maybe it's my Social Security benefit at 62 is $1,200 a month. So they're going to reduce my pension under CSRS by $600 a month. So that's a quick estimate. Now, the oranges may be $800 a month. I'm going to get those oranges when I collect Social Security. So I'm going to be maybe better off than my CSRS counterparts because the reduction is the lesser of the two.
Okay. Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
And you choose your words carefully because you're a sharp cookie. You said eligible. So let's say that I'm working and I'm eligible for Social Security, but I'm not going to go take it at 62 because I won't get any of it because my income is too high. So the term eligible doesn't mean that you're getting it.
That's absolutely correct. Entitled to or eligible for is completely different from actually receiving. And this is the negative thing about being CSRS offset. This is where you fall behind your CSRS counterparts because you already know that CSRS pensions are unaffected. You know, and if they are eligible for Social Security at 62, whether they apply for it or not, if they paid their military deposit, you know, their CSRS pensions are left alone for the rest of their life. But an offset retiree who does not want to collect Social Security yet at age 62, and maybe in a minute we'll talk about some other reasons why they would not collect Social Security at 62, but one reason is that you're working. You're making too much money. You got a consulting job after you left the federal government. You're making well over, what, $14,640? I think that's the limit this year. It went up just a little bit from last year to this year, but if you make more than that much money, you know, there's an earnings test because the purpose of Social Security is to replace some of your work income when you're done working. But if you're not done working, you know, that earnings test could quickly reduce your Social Security benefit you're entitled to receive to zero real fast. You know, especially if you're out there making $40,000 or $50,000 a year, a $1,500 a month Social Security check can be reduced just like that.
Okay,
you know, to zero.
Can I take you off on a tangent here?
But let me answer the question real quick. So I went on that little tirade there just for a moment, but whether the offset retiree applies for Social Security or not, the reduction happens to their pension at 62 or date of retirement, whichever is later.
Okay.
So it will, whether they apply for the benefit, unfortunately.
Okay, good. Thanks. Here's the tangent question. Many people today now debate whether to access their Social Security at 62, assuming that they wouldn't lose anything, or 65 or 70. And you see these calculations and the assumed, are you going to spend it or are you not? If you save it, how much are you going to make? And the real bottom line is, of course, your life expectancy. But if somebody was to say, listen, I don't want it, but I'm eligible, does that mess up what I'm going to get over my lifetime? In other words, if I'm eligible to get a dollar, but I waited until 65 or 70 and I get two, I'm not saying that it works like that. Would I then not get the two?
No, according to Social Security, if you live to be the normal life expectancies, that whether you apply for your, you know, 70% of your benefit at 62, whether you wait until 70 to get 132% of your benefit, or if you wait until 66 to get 100%, that supposedly if you live the normal life expectancies, and right now I think that's somewhere between 80 and 85 years old, that you'll get the same amount of money. Because you can either start collecting a smaller amount sooner and collect it longer for the rest of your life, or you can wait and collect a bigger benefit later, but receive it less payments of that bigger benefit. So they still say average life expectancies that you will get about the same amount of money. But the whole point is what if I want to live, or what if I plan on living beyond? What you want and what you actually do are two different things in this case, right? But if you plan on, expect to live more than the average person, you know, which is, you know, one out of every four Americans who live beyond the age of 65 make it to age 90. And one out of every 10, I think, make it to age 95. So, I mean, if you're going to be one of those four or one of those 10, according, this is stats that I got off of Social Security's website, of course. They're, you know, I'm not sure exactly where they got their numbers. Everybody gets their numbers from different places. But according to Social Security, you know, if you're going to be one of those folks, it might be worth waiting. But that's just one factor in your decision to apply.
Okay.
That's one. It's just how long do I expect to live? But if you expect to live the normal life expectancy, whether you collect it now or later, you're probably going to get the same amount of money. The question is, when do you need that money?
Yeah.
From Social Security, do you need it sooner? When you're vacationing and traveling, maybe you can let your TSP accounts grow a little bit longer, or vice versa. You might say, you know, if I'm very conservative with my TSP accounts, or if I don't have a nice big TSP account and I'm very conservative with all my savings, you know, maybe I only have CDs and other very conservative, you know, just savings accounts or money market accounts, maybe, you know, maybe it's best to touch or wait for Social Security and let that, maybe it'll grow faster than my cash accounts would, you know, in CDs or savings.
Okay. And, of course, we have fears of Social Security maybe not being as robust as it once was, and somebody's going to say, where do you see that? I don't see it anywhere. I read about it in between the lines.
That's right.
That there may be means testing, there may not.
Yeah.
Please don't quote me as saying that there is, and because there isn't. But
right.
It would seem to me they have to do something. And they did a little bit with Medicare, didn't they? If your income exceeds a certain level, your Medicare premiums go up with regards to Social Security. Abhorrently, but they go up. And you would think that the kind of the bullseye with taxes are people that make more than X. Well, if they make more than X and they get Social Security, who knows what's going to happen? But people should be aware of that. And I actually asked somebody, it was Tammy, when I hit 62, I said, I'm going to work till forever. Should I go ask for Social Security anyway, even though I'm not going to get any? But if they ever change it, I'm grandfathered in under the old provision. And she kind of looked at me like, you know, the dog looks at you when you say something. They go, well, what was that? And she goes, no.
Yeah. And we also got to look at the fact that sometimes Congress waits to the last minute to make adjustments or changes. You know, right whenever Social Security program might be having some serious issues where they – and what are they talking about? What, the year 2035 or 36 is what they're dealing with? Maybe only 70% of benefits will be payable by then. So sometimes Congress waits to the last minute to make adjustments. And it may be a few years, but it could happen any time now. If they try to get ahead of the game and say, let's just make this a means test, where if you have a certain sources of income and it meets a certain amount, that you're not going to be able to collect anything. Those are obviously people are going to want to try to maybe collect what they can while they can.
Okay. All righty. Yeah. Sorry, but taken off on that tangent.
Sure.
But, you know, this is important to know the benefits, but on the financial side, it's just as important to say, how do I keep most of those benefits? So, but we're going to stay away from the finances. All righty, James, where are we? We did the offset, we did the military and the Catch-62.
Well, the one thing I want to say about the offset is that, you know, it's not always about us as employees and retirees, but it could be about our families and our spouses, for example. The spouse usually is not affected by the offset that the retiree is affected by. You know, that's if the spouse is not entitled to a widow's or widower's benefit. So there are many offset employees and offset retirees who are married to people that have been working all their working career, I mean, all their lives. And they probably, in many cases, have a Social Security benefit that's bigger than the Social Security benefit that the offset employee earned for their spouse. So if that's the case, you know, if your work record is better than your spouse's, you know, and I'm a private sector employee and I'm married to an offset employee, okay, if my Social Security record is better than hers, then I'm never going to be entitled to a widow's or a widower's benefit. So that means if she provides a survivor benefit to me under CSRS offset, my survivor benefit will not be affected because I'm not eligible for any of her widow's or widower's benefits from Social Security. The only time that I have to deal with an offset to my survivor benefit as somebody who's married to an offset employee is if their Social Security benefit is better than mine. So that's something that they just, for financial planning, they need to be aware of that. You know, what kind of survivor benefit will I get? Not everybody fully understands that at the agency level. They don't really know how to explain that to their employees. And it's a very important factor to consider. And every case is different because everybody is, you know, married to someone who either worked or didn't work. And some folks have better Social Security records than their spouses, but it really needs to look at that case by case basis. You know, what are they going to get if I pass away?
And there are programs, but I think there are probably only two out there in the industry. That's just my gut feel. You would know better than this, that really have the horsepower to do these calculations.
Neither one of them, both those programs that most of the agencies use, neither one of them show you the exact offset that the survivor would have to face. And they don't really even tell you in the fine print on the second or third page of, you know, the offset may apply. You know, they don't say that anywhere on there. You know, I worked for one of the companies, and I tried to get them to add that print on there, and they never did add that print. I said, well, it's important for those few individuals who need to be aware of it.
Well, if we could ever write a program, which we never could, in ITP, actually, many years ago we tried, and it was about 20-some-odd years ago, and after about 3 months, I said, this isn't going to happen.
It's taken those companies over 25 years to perfect what they have today, and they still have things that they can't compute.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like reinventing the wheel. You know?
And we're not saying anything bad about these companies because we're very respectful
those
of
those tools.
Both
are wonderful tools to use.
Yeah.
But yeah, they only do so much.
Okay, James, back to are we at windfall elimination yet?
Let's talk about. So what we've done so far is all we've said, how is my federal pension, if I'm CSRS or offset, affected by any Social Security? So now what we're going to talk about is, how is Social Security going to be affected if I'm a CSRS retiree or a CSRS offset retiree?
Okay,
so it's the opposite side of the fence.
Do FERS need to be concerned about this?
Well, the only time FERS retirees have to concern themselves about Social Security benefits is, their Social Security being affected is if they're a FERS transferee. You know, if they had at least 5 years or more under CSRS before they elected to transfer to FERS, they have a CSRS component, and they may be affected by what we're going to talk about now, called the windfall elimination provision and or the government pension offset, which we'll define in just a moment. But in a little bit, when we finish talking about the WEP, and the government pension offset, we can come back to FERS retirees and talk about this thing called the FERS annuity supplement. But let's focus on the windfall elimination provision first. For those folks who are retired and receiving some sort of pension that is either based wholly on or partially on service where they did not pay Social Security taxes. So that includes my CSRS retirees, it includes offset retirees, and it also includes FERS transferees, that you might be subject to this thing called the windfall elimination provision. Back in the mid-80s, there were a lot of amendments that were made to the Social Security program, and one of those amendments was this windfall elimination provision. And it was, the purpose of it was to equalize the program to give the benefits to those people who have been paying Social Security taxes all their lives but didn't make a lot of money, to give, to equalize the program for those folks versus somebody who's been a CSRS employee, for most of their career, especially if they haven't been paying Social Security taxes for a big part of their career. Back before the windfall elimination provision was created, those folks had an advantage over private sector employees making the same amount of money. You know, private sector employees making the same amount of money as a CSRS employee, but they were paying Social Security taxes, where the CSRS employee wasn't. The CSRS employee was treated like a low-paid worker. And a low-paid worker gets more out of, not more money, but they get more return on their, and if you want to think of their tax as an investment, the money that I've been putting in over my working career, a low-paid worker is not expected to have as much money saved up to be able to afford to live, in retirement. So they get a better return on that investment out of Social Security. But a CSRS employee before this windfall elimination provision was enacted was getting that same benefit, and it wasn't fair according to a lot of folks in America back in the mid-80s, so they changed the rules to equalize or to balance the scales, so to speak, between what they get and what low-paid workers get in America. So the way it works is the formula gets modified. The formula that's used to compute a pension for anybody who's – I mean, compute a Social Security benefit for anybody who's in receipt of a CSRS or a CSRS type of pension – it could be affected by the windfall elimination provision. Maybe in a minute we can talk about what some of those numbers might look like.
Okay. All right. And the government pension offset is similar to the WEP?
The government pension offset is another rule that came out about the same time, but it affects any spousal benefits that these people try to collect. If we're always talking about the people that are in receipt of a pension like CSRS, offset, or FERS transferee. However, FERS transferees and offset employees, most of those folks are exempt from the GPO because those folks, once they have 5 years or more under FERS or under the offset, they're exempt from the government pension offset. And the GPO only affects benefits that I'm trying to collect as a CSRS retiree off of my spouse's Social Security record. It doesn't affect the benefit I am eligible to receive based on my own 40 credits. Remember, that's what the WEP affects. If I have my 40 credits and I'm receiving a CSRS type of pension, the WEP affects that. The GPO is a little bit different. The WEP can never reduce the benefit to zero. There's protection under the law from that. But the GPO could easily, and in most cases, reduces benefit that the CSRS retiree tries to collect off their spouse's record to zero. Because two-thirds of the CSRS pension, whatever that amount is, that's how much they reduce the benefit that the retiree can collect off the spouse's record. And nine times out of 10, two-thirds of anybody's CSRS pension is even bigger than 100% of any Social Security benefit that these people receive. That means even if you lose your spouse, as a CSRS retiree, you lose your spouse, chances are a widow's or a widower's benefit would even be reduced to zero. So the point here is that, you know, the only time that you might ever expect to receive a Social Security check, if you're a CSRS retiree, is if you got your 40 credits, you know, under Social Security. And then, of course, that would be subject to the windfall elimination provision. And there are ways to, you know, eliminate or reduce the windfall elimination provision that we can talk about as well, if you'd like.
Well, let me ask you this. If it would be detrimental in some cases to do this, can you just not apply for it? Or does it get back to your cleverly crafted word, eligible? So I don't want any Social Security because I don't want to get caught with this, whatever you call it.
Well, I mean, if I'm eligible for some money, even if it's going to be reduced, I'd like to have my money. You know, I mean, of course, I mean, there's nothing wrong with asking for a benefit off your spouse's work record, but before they give you any money, they're probably going to say, well, let's run the GPO calculation. They'll look at your CSRS pension, and they'll compare that with what you're eligible to receive, and they'll probably say that there's nothing there. But if you have your 40 credits, I'm going to apply for some benefit.
I'm still going to get something. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So there's always something there. It never reduces your benefit to zero, and there's protection under the law for those folks with tiny pensions, but that's usually not the case with most CSRS folks. But the most that they can reduce a benefit by right now for someone who turns 62 years old this year is right around $380, about $383 a month. That's the most. So if I'm a CSRS retiree and I only have about 12 or 13 years of paying Social Security taxes under my belt, that estimate I got last year, I'm going to subtract about $400 a month from that, and that's probably a closer guesstimate of what I'll actually receive if I push the go button with Social Security at that time.
Okay. Now we're at 202-465-3080. 202-465-3080. And we would love to hear from you because this is not easily understood information. Yes, you can get to it, but you'd have to read an awful lot. But you have an expert on the other end of the phone, not me, when you call, and you can talk to James. And James, I think people can get you as well off the air.
They certainly can. They can go to my website at www.federalretirementinfo. Info is short for information. Federalretirementinfo.com. So it's pretty easy to get there to that website. Or they can call me at toll-free 1-800-590-6982.
Great. All righty. Now let's shine a spotlight on the FERS person. All right, the FERS annuity supplement. How is that? It's not Social Security, but the calculation is almost as if it was, but it isn't paid by Social Security. It's paid by OPM, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct. But one last thing I want to say before we get into the FERS is, you know, what if I'm still working as a CSRS employee, you know, beyond my full retirement age, which is usually in your mid-60s? The windfall elimination provision and the government pension offset does not affect any Social Security you can collect at that time. So that's a lot of people in our classes. They're like, James, I'll come into the second day course, but 2 days from now, after this class is over with, I'm going downtown and applying for benefits that I can get while I can get it. Because if I lost my spouse and I'm 66 years old and reached my full retirement age, there's no more earnings test. You know, I can make as much money as I want as a CSRS employee. I can collect my full widow's benefits, you know, my widower's benefit. But as soon as I retire, that widower's benefit is going to be reduced to zero. And the same thing with collecting off my own record. If I'm collecting I can collect a Social Security benefit when I reach my full retirement age. The windfall elimination provision will not affect that until I become a CSRS retiree. So a lot of these folks are applying for Social Security when they reach their FRA for that reason. Even though they can wait until 70 to collect a bigger benefit, you know, compared to what they're going to be reduced to by the WEP or the GPO, sometimes it's best for those folks to apply for Social Security when they reach their FRA, if they're still working. Those are the exceptions there. And there are a lot of folks under CSRS and the classes that we teach every day that are in their mid-60s already and they're still working. They didn't know that, so they can collect some money while they can, and it makes a big difference. Okay, now to get back to your annuity supplement. The FERS annuity supplement is an extra amount of money that some folks, not everybody under FERS, but some folks under FERS would be entitled to receive. And there's only really three types of retirements that qualify for a full pension under FERS as well as a supplement. And that's either the early retirements, which also include your law enforcement officers and firefighters. It's early retirements offered by the agencies. We talked about that on other shows, including retiring at your MRA with 30 years of service. You reach your minimum retirement age under FERS, you got 30 plus years of service, you get a full pension plus the supplement. Or the third option is age 60 with 20. If you're 60 years old with 20 years of service, you get a full pension plus you get the supplement. So all the other types of retirements don't get the supplement. So if I'm going to work beyond the age of 62, I don't get the supplement. If I go out under the disability retirement, I don't get the supplement. If I go out under the MRI plus 10 provisions, there's no supplement. It's only under those three types of retirements. It's kind of like getting your Social Security early, but it doesn't come from Social Security like you mentioned. And the reason for it is when they designed the FERS retirement system, it was intended to be a three-tier system. And Social Security is one of the sources of income that you're expected to draw from when you're living off of nothing but retirement income. But there's a lot of flexibility under FERS to allow people to retire with full pensions before the age of 62. And, of course, most folks who are listening to the show know that they're not entitled to Social Security until they turn 62. So because of that, they want to bridge that gap. And so OPM bridges that gap using the supplement. It's like getting a little bit of extra money on top of the regular pension. In addition to that, you don't have to apply for it separately. It's part of the retirement application if you qualify for one of those three types of retirements.
Okay, and it's also not taxed like Social Security, which Social Security is very tax efficient.
That's right.
In other words, the taxes are low relative to what it would be on other pensions or annuities.
Yeah, and you're the tax guy, so it's my understanding that it's taxed the same way that the pensions are taxed.
Exactly. So it doesn't get the special treatment that Social Security would, but then again, you can't get Social Security before 62, so...
Yeah. And so it's better than nothing, but there is an earnings test, just like there's an earnings test on Social Security for people who try to touch their Social Security before their full retirement age. There's an earnings test on the supplement. And because remember, the whole purpose of the supplement is to replace Social Security, and the whole purpose of Social Security is to give you some income to replace your work income. But if you're still working after you retire from the federal government, any work income, not to be confused with the retirement income, not to be confused with the basement apartment you're renting out, getting that income. We're talking about income from which you would typically pay Social Security taxes, including self-employment income. If you're working after you retire, that earnings could affect your supplement. It doesn't affect your pension. No matter how much money you make, you can collect your full pension, but the earnings that you make after you retire affects your supplement. And it could reduce it to zero eventually, but OPM, unlike Social Security, Social Security applies the earnings test in advance. Before you get any money from Social Security, they ask you how much money do you plan on making. But OPM lets you make the money first, and then January, when you get your W-2 statements together after you've been retired, they ask how much money did you make if you made more than this earnings test, which is that $14,640. Then next year is when they reduce your benefit by $1 for every $2 you made over that, only your supplement. So if you time your exit strategy from your agency, especially if you have a job lined up that wants to pay you some good money, because you're not going to really give up a $100,000 a year job just to take home a $1,200 a month supplement, are you? But just be aware that if you've got that job, it's going to affect that supplement. But if you retire in December, they're not even going to ask you for a whole other year. They're going to let you collect 12 months of supplement at least before they stop it the following year. If you retire in October and you're not going to make $14,640 by December 31st, because it's between date of retirement and December 31st, mm-hmm. If you're not going to make that money, then that means you got it for 14 months at least. That's if your supplement's $1,200 a month, that's an extra $2,000 or $3,000. That you might get an addition, just by timing your exit strategy. So it's a good idea to think, when you're choosing what month to retire, consider that supplement if you have a nice paying job lined up after you retire under FERS.
Actually, we talk about timing retirement when I do the tax portion of the seminar. And I mentioned Social Security. I don't mention what you just said, but I will now.
Yep. It's a good point. I mean, it's a good thing to think about. And it can sometimes, your exit strategy can net you, not just a couple of thousand, but maybe sometimes $10,000, $12,000, just depending upon your scenario, what kind of job you lined up. Maybe sometimes it's worth taking a little vacation before you pick up that job. So that way you don't earn enough income to they leave you alone for a whole another 12 months. 12 times $1,200 a month. A lot of the supplements I see are somewhere between like $900 a month to like $1,500 a month on average, in addition to their monthly pension. So that's a lot. That adds up when you add 12 months of that.
Yeah, that's a chunk of change.
That is.
I'm not mistaken. It's,
double up on your mortgage payments for a year or so.
Oh, my gosh. You're a financial planner,
too? Oh, here we
too?
Go. Yeah, I'm not a financial planner at all. So I just throw that out there and I say, hold that question for tomorrow's class and see if that's worth doing.
James, you'd get a kick out of this, and listeners, don't believe that this is law, but I read more than what I should probably, but this was it was in a major investment publication. It was how to fix Social Security, and they were talking about, you know, they're making these predictions that it would be insolvent by such and such a day. Whether that's true or not, it's another story, but this is the track the article took, and it was kind of a unique idea, and it said, listen, if somebody was to tell you that eventually this payment that you're receiving is going to be paid by somebody that's insolvent, maybe, you know, it's let's make a deal. If we owe you a dollar, we'll pay you 83 cents. And you scratch your head and say, why would I do that? Because the risk is that you wouldn't get the dollar or the 83 cents later on, and they would issue TIPS, Treasury Inflation Protected Investments, and say, okay, here's your money. We don't owe you anything anymore. And they pay you 83 cents on the dollar. It's kind of a unique idea that somebody would get the money and then it would float with inflation. Anyway, because I see an awful lot of these articles that are maybe beamed to me because of, you know, my email site. But then other articles will be, you know, do you take it at 62 or do you take it at 66 or do you wait to 70? And they all kind of boil down those is, well, what's your life expectancy? You can wait till 70, but if you don't have a long life expectancy, it probably wasn't your best move.
Sure.
And as you mentioned, too, there are stats, I think, that you mentioned Social Security has, that if you hit 65 your possibility of hitting 90 is, what, 40%? I forget what you said.
Yeah, if you reach age 65, one out of four, you know, people make it to 90, and one out of 10 make it to 95, you know, and I don't know what the stats are beyond that, but I just was looking that up yesterday on Social Security's website.
Okay. It's another year I have a chance to make it to 80. Okay.
Yeah, because I guess there's certain things that take you out, you know, if you don't make it to 65. But once you make it to 65, there's certain things that take a little bit longer to take you out. So I guess the odds improve.
Okay. Well, maybe I'll cut back on the donuts and the ice cream. All righty. Back to the first, folks, because we have, you know, this, the CSRSers and the CSRS offsets are generally a group that's more currently retiring than some of the FERS. So somebody at the mid-level or late mid-career, early pre-retirement career under FERS, what do they need to look for as far as projecting out what their Social Security is going to be? You told me you could go to a website and you can work with it because you don't get the paper anymore, which is fine. And you can go to the website and then can you play with it and say, okay, I'm 55. What if I wait till I'm 60? I'm 60. What if I wait till I'm 62? Yeah, can you do that kind of stuff?
While I was waiting out in the car today, I just went ahead and got my smartphone, turned it on, and I was surprised. Even with my little phone, I was able to go on Social Security's website, type in my Social Security number, my date of birth, put in my mother's maiden name, and pulled up all my records in the background. I couldn't see all the years broken down. I guess you still got to contact Social Security if you ever want to see a printout of that to double-check what your companies and agencies are reporting, you know, each year. Make sure they're reporting that accurate because they do use those earnings to compute your benefits. But, you know, I just logged on, and it took me less than 5 minutes to, you know, less than 5 minutes. And that's only because I can't do my little keyboard on my phone very well. But it took me less than 5 minutes to get a number of what's waiting for me at 62. And also, it immediately showed me three figures, 62, and in my case, 67. My full retirement is 67 and age 70. And it says, assuming that I was making a certain amount of money, I was able to plug in how much money do I think I'm going to be making for the next few years. Now, the closer you are to those ages, the more accurate that estimate will be, that calculator. But then it also immediately allowed me to run another scenario. So it just lets you run all sorts of scenarios that you want to see. You know, it doesn't have to be 66 years old or 67. It could be at 64 and 5 months old, what kind of benefit would I get? So you can plug all those factors in. And that was the easy calculator. They have more sophisticated calculators that you can use on their website that you can plug in all sorts of factors, all details. You can make every year between now and the age of 62 a different earnings amount. And you can plug in anything you want. I mean, it really can get as detailed as you want. And if you have any trouble with the internet, you don't like computers, you don't like web-based programs, you probably have a child or a grandkid that's about 8 or 9 years old or a niece or nephew, that you sit them down next to you and they will whip out those numbers for you. They have no problems with computers these days at that age.
Wow.
But then the programs are pretty easy to use. And if you have any trouble, the folks for free. You call Social Security, and their numbers that are always listed on the website. You call your local office or the hotline number that they have. They'll walk you through anything you need assistance with.
We'll probably spend some time next week on that. We have a gentleman from Social Security, Lester Austin, coming in. And if you've not listened to Lester before, listen to Lester. Very enthusiastic about his job and what he does. And he'll explain that for us folks that might be a little computer challenged with regards to getting into it otherwise. All righty. So the first person, they need to understand that I'm sure they understand that their retirement is based on the proverbial three-legged stool of the amount of money and the thrift, the Social Security, and their base FERS annuity. Base FERS annuity is, I guess, somewhat of an easy calculation as compared to the other ones. You know, how much do you take out of your thrift? And later, let's see, it's March, it'll be late April, early May, where we'll have the director of the thrift and his counterpart come on, and we'll talk about the Roth TSP. And what we're doing, we'll be doing webinars on the Roth TSP, too.
Yeah, that'll be exciting to see you, you know. And I know the common question is, should I do the Roth? And that's because, you know, I guess the answer to that is dependent upon their scenarios. There's tons of factors. I was listening to your show, two shows. It was part one and part two earlier this year, and it was really informative. But it's still, nothing's been outlined in black and white of all the details on how they're implementing it yet. So I guess that you guys are going to have those folks come.
We're going to have that, and then we're going to we've developed a kind of side by side comparison, traditional, let's call it TSP, to the Roth TSP. And then, you know, who need not apply and who would be attracted to it. Very generally, you can't say this person.
Sure.
And try to get it across that way.
Yeah,
I think we've about got it, but we don't know all the edges. And the thrift folks have been very kind to us in that regard. And they'll be kinder once they get questions from people as well.
Sure.
The more questions, the better the answers.
Yeah, and the more we can answer for them, the less they have to deal with on their toll-free lines.
Yeah. So that'll be kind of fun. Of course, being an accountant type, it's fun for me. It might not be fun for others, but nonetheless. Okay, let's get back to Social Security and the FERS people. How about now somebody unfortunately being widowed or widower, and they receive Social Security. How does that work if their spouse happened to pass and they were getting a dollar? How much does the surviving spouse get with Social Security? That's really an open-ended question.
Well, it's a good question, though. It's based upon how old the spouse is. Now, just because I lose my spouse, you know, as somebody who's entitled to collect a widower's benefit, you know, just because I lost my spouse, I don't have to apply for widower's benefits right now. I can wait. And maybe I'm only 62 and I'm collecting 60 or 75% of my benefit. And maybe my spouse's benefit that she was collecting was slightly bigger than mine. Well, if I switch over to a widower's benefit, I'm only eligible for 75% of the benefit because I'm only 62. But if I wait, you know, I can collect 75% of my own benefit right now. And then when I turn 66, I can collect 100% of hers for the rest of her life. So it could be bigger. It's based upon how old you are at the time you apply for the widow's or widower's benefit. A lot of folks will apply for the benefit immediately because sometimes that benefit is higher than their own. The opposite could be true. Like I'm 62, I lose my spouse. I could apply for 75% of her benefit, but I can let my benefit grow until 70 and maybe be entitled to like almost 132% of my benefit for the rest of my life. You know, when I switch records from a widower to my own work record when I turn 70. So there's things to think about, but you're not alone. Social Security will help you with this. When you lose your spouse, you set up that appointment, and I think anybody would recommend that if you want to set up an appointment, you call in advance. So that way you don't have to wait as long. Otherwise, it's like sitting in line at the DMV. But, you know, you set up that appointment.
That bad?
It can be at some of these offices. They're not all created equal. Some of those offices are better than others. I always recommend that you talk to your friends, coworkers, or family who have already applied, and if they had a good experience, go to that Social Security office because you don't have to go to the one in your neighborhood. You go to one that that meets your needs. But they'll walk you through all the options and the benefits. And if you start taking this money, here's how much you'll get versus if you do this, this is how much you get. And then you're going to be the best person to decide what should I collect when I collect it.
All right. We had an individual email us, and you might get a kick out of this. This individual was previously married. The two spouses at over a fair number of years worked a small business. But when the tax return was done, although the business indicated both names at the top of the IRS form. Only one Social Security number was in there.
No.
And when they did the form to calculate the Social Security, it's called a 1040 ES, or SE rather. When they did it, only the one spouse did it. If they had done two, then each would qualify. Well, the divorce, the one isn't about to say, oh, yeah, you're right, reduce mine so that the other one can get half. So I'm just, it's very odd, the situation. But for those listening or know somebody like that, you might mention that when the tax return is done, make sure that income gets split and each pays tax on half of the earnings.
Because there was nothing that Social Security could do for that individual?
They had to prove it. They said, okay, just show us the forms. Well, first, the forms probably aren't there from 10 or 20 years ago. And second, if the one has it, it's not about to show up
anywhere.
Right, right.
Yeah, that's tough.
Yeah.
They didn't even have a work record. So, but if they were married to that person for 10 years or more, right, they can collect a benefit as a former spouse.
But oddly enough, I think they had either greater income or something that it wouldn't do anything for them.
Gotcha.
Anyway, that's just a comment, but that might be out there in the weeds. As
sure.
Bob Bronstein often calls it. I love when he says that. You get in the weeds too much.
Well, both Bob and I get into the weeds as well with the stuff that we deal with. But yeah, your stuff is above our pay grade, that's for sure. So that's why we always count on you, Bob, for tax issues.
That's what makes it synergistic, James. I don't understand most of what you're talking about until you do it, and I understand it for about 20 minutes afterwards, and then I call you up.
Yeah, and you don't have to worry about your job, because I don't want it. I only have enough room in my head to hold on to the content that I've got. I don't have any more room for anything else.
All righty. Now, we don't have much time left, but general comments, thought processes, or caution signs for our listeners?
Yeah, just kind of recap real quick. You know, CSRS pensions are left alone unless you have unpaid military deposit. That's if and only if you have your 40 credits for Social Security. Offset pensions, same military deposit rules, but they have the offset or the reduction when they become eligible for Social Security, whether they apply for the benefit or not. The reduction happens at 62 or date of retirement, whichever is later. The windfall elimination provision really affects people that are receipt of CSRS, offset, or first transferees, but it's reduced for people who are first transferees or offset because they've been paying Social Security taxes for so many years, and they whittle away at the windfall elimination provision and might even be exempt from it. GPO really only affects CSRS retirees. But other than that, FERS pensions are left alone.
Access point, James, real fast.
Access point?
For you.
For me? Again, it's federalretirementinfo.com. And, of course, James at federalretirementinfo.com. But my email address is on there. Toll-free number, 1-800-590-6982.
Thank you, James. As usual, it's a pleasure and informative.
Thank you, Bob. It's always my pleasure.
For the listeners, we'll be on next week, and we'll talk about Social Security again. Maybe not in the weeds as much, but we will talk about it with Lester. And you'll love listening to Lester like you did, James. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.